Coming up on Golf Today, Hideki is the man on Maui, rolling his rock in a record-setting week. How did he do it, and what is next for the game's quiet superstar? Well, a new era in golf begins tomorrow. TGL gets ready for its close-up. What are the challenges and opportunities in the golf league backed by Tiger and Rory? And our first roundtable of the year features a feisty Ryan Lavner. What did Lav think of the low scores at Kapalua? Happy New Year! It's Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Happy 2025. In case you are new around here, this is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Amy Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. It's been a minute since we sat side by side. How was your break?
It was great. I actually chased the sun a little bit, chased the golf ball around the golf course once in a while. Actually found a few fairways. I think this is going to be my year, Damon. And if it is, I'm going to smite all of you guys who've mocked me for years. This is going to be the season.
We're
going to
battle inside the rope. Speaking of which, we'll be talking about Scottie Scheffler in 2025 as much as we did in 2024.
How could we not? I mean, who's going to bet against Scottie Scheffler at this point? Because unless you're either a law enforcement officer or a piece of glass, what else stops him these days? That's what kept him out, obviously, last week at the Century out in Hawaii. But, I mean, do you see any signs of weakness in that guy?
No signs of slowing down. Listen, this is not some heater that he's on. This is who Scottie Scheffler is. But someone that we know very well has thrown his hat into the ring. That, of course, the 11-time PGA Tour winner, Hideki Matsuyama, clearing his voice on Kapalua. This is round one, the reachable par 4, 14. How about that flop shot?
This was actually his weakest part of his game this week, with strokes gained around the green, but this was his best day around the greens.
Fairway medal. I love watching, selfishly, I love watching hit the fairway medals. This is 15.
In round one, that beautiful approach on the green in two. Getting better and better.
Eagle in a round of 65, as he often does, just kind of calmly going through his business. This is the second round now, par 3, 8.
This golf course is all about what happens to the ball after it hits the ground. Real evidence of that here, just using that shoulder on the right side of the green. Feeding it back in there, tight. That was another in a long list of birdies.
Yes, had himself a week on the Crenshaw Core Gym. This is also round two. This is the gorgeous par 4, 17th.
We saw a lot of this from Hideki this week. Almost hooked it.
Nearly holes it. I wait for it because he would have an opportunity to do that later on. So that's another 65 for the 2021 Masters champ. Now on to round three, par 5, 15th, his second. How about that sound?
Not a sound you and I are familiar with, Damon.
No, not on purpose.
And again, throws this back there, rolls it off the slope.
Oh, look at that.
Getting better and better again.
A lot of personality to the plantation course at Kapalua. Two-putt birdie in a round of 62. Now, this is the fourth round. I tried to kind of, you know, tease a little potential hole out. How about this shot?
That is his second shot. Hold out for eagle. He actually played the par 5s 11 under this week. He's pretty good on the par 4s too, 18 under thanks to shots like that.
Yeah, pretty good with the flat stick as well in this final round. This on the par 3, 11th for birdie. Just kind of doing his thing. How about this? A two-shot lead now on the par 4, 16th. How about this to keep Colin Morikawa at bay?
Afterwards, Morikawa said this is when he knew he wasn't going to win the tournament.
Another great iron shot, another birdie. Now this for a 72-hole scoring record.
Never a doubt. 35 under par, the lowest score to par all time in the history of the PGA Tour.
Said it was important for him to do the Hawaii sweep, sweep the opening drive. Has won the Sony, now has won the Century, a three-shot win over Colin Morikawa for his 11th career win on the PGA Tour. And hey, you know, Hideki making history from the word jump, lowest score to par, it belongs to him now. And if you want to get right, the Century a place to to really shake off the rust. As you can see, historically, it has been a place to go low. And I tell you, I'm fascinated by this player. Reminds me a little bit of Vijay Singh. Supreme ball striker. The putter can kind of be hot and cold. This is someone who found this putter over Christmas, saw someone else using it, liked how it looked, comes to the 50th State of the Union, and absolutely makes nearly everything he looks at.
And that's really indicative of Hideki's weakness, as it were, which is the putter, because you have to go back 5 years to find a season in which Hideki was top 100 in strokes gained putting, and he's frequently been well outside the top 150 and 170 even in that category. So if you're finding a kind of putter off the rack in the shop, it speaks to a guy who isn't necessarily wedded to the same apparatus.
And neither was Vijay. Vijay had a garage filled with putters, and it would kind of depend on the week or how he slept the night before. Yeah. But to me, this is a player, you know, they're preparing a bus for him in the World Golf Hall of Fame in Pinehurst, North Carolina. He's now an 11-time winner, already a major champ, has already won a couple of World Golf Championships, has won in the playoffs.
Do you think he's that close to the Hall of Fame
right
now?
Oh, I do. And I'll tell you why. It's a World Golf Hall of Fame. This is someone who's the first Japanese major champ in the men's game. This is someone who, you know, broke through in the Masters. This is someone who has to do, I'm talking like minutes and sometimes hours of post-round interviews, much like Tiger, microphone in his face, notepads in his face. And as I talked to Brandel about over the weekend, and he was quick to point out the players who have followed him, the Keta Nakajimas, the Takumi Kanayas. This is a pioneer in his country, immensely popular in the country of Japan. It's not a United States Golf Hall of Fame. It is a World Golf Hall of Fame, and he is one of the great exports and pioneers in this modern game at the age of 32.
I definitely think he's on a trajectory towards the Hall of Fame. The whole iconic stature in Asia thing is interesting. He's a hero in a country he almost never competes in. Mm. And, you know, he plays the Zozo, which is a PGA Tour event, happens to take place in Japan. A few times over the last half dozen years, he's played the Dunlop Phoenix Tournament. That was actually his last start in November, and he was tied second there. That's it for Hideki Matsuyama competing in Japan.
He did win the Zozo. I mean,
he has won the Zozo. He's won against strong fields on strong courses, you know, obviously at Augusta, but he's won at Firestone. He's won at Muirfield Village. Yeah. He's won at Riviera. He's not going out there and pitching up victories against weak fields. He's beating strong fields and frequently doing so with strong performances on strong golf courses. I do find it interesting that you would barely get to double digits in the last 10 years if you try to count the number of competitive appearances Hideki has actually made on his home tour. And Japan does actually have a pretty robust tour of its own. So there are opportunities for Hideki to play there. Maybe that just speaks to either a commitment to the PGA Tour or the aforementioned scrutiny that he's under in terms of Japanese media, that it's just not as comfortable for him to compete there as it is for him to compete over here.
Has to be overwhelming.
It's a remarkable performance. He has those 11 wins. Five of them have been by more than three shots.
Yeah.
Three shots or more. And he's also won four in playoffs.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a runaway or a tight match. Hideki's he's a very striking competitor because he's imperturbable out there. You don't see Hideki get upset. You don't see Hideki start to look nervous. You can't really think of a moment where Hideki had a tournament within reach and let it go. The oddity here is he's been something of a no-show in the majors since that 2021 Masters. Mm. 14 appearances in majors since he won that green jacket, just two top tens.
Yeah, he's also an Olympic bronze medalist and does seem to have the appearances. You talk about someone who is unflappable that could take on a Scottie Scheffler head-to-head, maybe be someone to kind of change the storyline of golf over the last couple of years and maybe challenge the world number one on a major championship stage.
Well, he's up to top five in the world right now. We're kind of looking for anyone to challenge Scottie Scheffler for any kind of position in the world of golf right now. There are probably at least four or five candidates that you go into 2025 hoping these are the guys who will actually make a charge and give Scottie Scheffler something to think about. Hideki's made a pretty strong statement that he could be one of those guys. The question is, again, will the putter be consistent enough? He was third in the field in putting this week, so he's off to a great start for a guy who's not among the longest players out there. And he was only one guy, Jonathan Vegas, was closer in terms of strokes gained approach than Hideki was. So he has the weapons. That's not even in doubt. Is the putter going to be consistent enough?
Hideki Matsuyama, one of those players potentially to challenge Scottie Scheffler. How about another guy, a two-time major champ, maybe a winner who didn't win this week? I'm speaking of the Cal Golden Bear, Colin Morikawa. Now, here he is on the par 3 eighth after a bogey at 6. The putter kind of let him down midway through that first 9 yesterday.
It did, but he drained that. He ended up shooting 35 on the front 9, which is pretty average. Kapalua.
Yeah, it is. You can get lapped. Now, here he is in the par 4 10th, just trying to keep pace with Hideki.
And at this point, he was at least not getting lost in Hideki's rear-view mirror.
He's talked about being committed to every swing and every shot in 2025. Here he is in the par 4 14th from the bunker.
He's made a lot of progress around the greens in the last few years, particularly since his kind of collapsed here a couple of years ago, which was caused at the business end of the hole.
Yeah, that was the story of his loss to Jon Rahm. Now here he is on the par 5, 15th.
Oh, come on!
Chasing after it, Amy.
No, he likes it when he's walking it back there. Beautiful shot. Led to another birdie, got him to 31 under par.
And you're thinking maybe we've seen some strange things happen on the final few holes at the Plantation course. Now here he is, his approach at the 18th. He kind of needs a miracle at this point.
He does, but he was in a comfortable position, so he wasn't going to try to sling it in from the right, as we often see there. He went right over that penalty area.
Beautiful shot to that par 5 18th we've seen throughout the years. The season opener on the PGA Tour, Colin, with 2-putt birdie finish at minus 32, so it's a second runner-up finish for Colin at the Century, much less heartbreaking than it was a couple of years ago to Jon Rahm. Fantastic record. Here's Colin on his Sunday and his week.
Just going through the shots I left out there. You know, there was a good handful that I wish I could have back. And, you know, when you don't get it done, you kind of, your mind, that's where your mind goes to. I know there's a lot of positives, and it's going to take me a few hours or a day to get over it. But, you know, it's just, how do you clean things up for 4 rounds? I mean, you know, it's tough to win. And, you know, I've seen it over this kind of past year. And like I said, I love being in this position. This is a position you want to be in. I want to keep giving myself chances. You know, I know they're going to come. Just, you know, when Zozo happened, I knew, you just know if you just keep knocking at the door. And, you know, we're going to go on a roll pretty soon. It's just hopefully sooner rather than later.
How would you describe what Hideki did these last 2 days?
Excuse my language, but 3,500 par is, that's low. I mean, you know, he was matching me yesterday shot for shot, and I felt like I was playing lights out, right? Like, there were, you know, yes, you could leave some shots out there, but I mean, you shoot 11 under at any golf course, you're going to be happy, right? And, you know, today you just never let up. And then you get to the third hole and the guy holds it. And, you know, I just knew I had to be on top of everything and just kind of let a few slip on that front 9. Played a good back 9, but, you know, it's to win, you know, on a course like this, conditions like this, you got to have it for 72. And, you know, I had it for 65.
What is something you're optimistic about from this week?
Just the way I played. You know, I told you that mindset, right, of leaving everything out there, and I feel like I did. Yes, you know, a couple shots are not going to go your way, and just that little stretch, I wish I could just slow it down a half beat, you know, just walking and just thinking. But, you know, I felt like from a start, you know, Thursday, first hole, I was ready to play golf. And it's hard to do that sometimes, especially it's hard to do it out here when you got wide fairways, you know, you can kind of cruise into maybe a 5-6 under and get the year started. But I came out here trying to be ready for golf, and I'm going to try and do that for the, you know, every event out there. I don't care if it's my third, fourth week in a row, first week after whatever. You know, that's going to be the mentality for the entire year.
There was an interesting moment in that interview from Colin last night where he dropped an audible profanity in exclamation of the performance that he just witnessed from Hideki Matsuyama. And our buddy Rich Lerner thought that he was probably going to get a fine, and should get a fine in Rich's mind, from the PGA Tour. I got to tell you, when I'm commish, he's going to be bonused for things
bonused.
Like that. You can't sanction authenticity out of the game. This is a game that has enough vanilla as it is right now. A little personality. No one wants to hear it all the time. The idea that it happens once in a while, to me, is a little bit authentic. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say encourage it.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Discourage it.
Yeah, it was honest. I think it was definitely, you know, not expected. I think he just kind of came out of his mouth and was more talking about the greatness of Hideki Matsuyama to go 35 under over four rounds on the PGA Tour. He might get a phone call and say, hey, you know, you're in a media situation with a live mic. I wouldn't.
Well, the fact that the PGA Tour left it out of the official transcript would suggest that he might get a phone call. But think about Morikawa here from. Imagine if you go out every day and, you know, you shoot 8 under par and you still lose by 3 to Hideki. In this case, he shot 33 under par. That would have won all but a handful of events in the history of the PGA Tour.
It's a great
and
point.
And it's not good enough in this week. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, the conditions, the par of 73 at this golf course. There's a lot of factors go into that. But Colin Morikawa at least won by a mile the mortals division of this tournament out there. It probably adds a little frustration to him because he's been very close in this tournament before. He's had some upsetting rounds in this tournament before where it really came undone with his pitching and chipping issues a couple of years ago. But there was a as consistent as he was, and I thought he had a great comment last night. He said he came out here ready to play.
Yeah.
So he's not seeking, which so many of these guys are at this point in the year. They're tinkering what's working, what needs a little work under the hood. He didn't have that sense. But there was a noticeable erosion in his ball striking on the weekend. If you look at his rank in the field, strokes gained off the tee for the 4 days, he went 16th, 9th, 11th, 30th on Sunday. And his strokes gained approach, 13th, 23rd, 2nd, 28th.
Yeah.
And so the putting was not the issue. He was rock solid. He was top 20 every day in putting, which has been a weakness of his in the past. But the ball striking just dropped a little notch, and that little notch is the
it's kind everything.
Of space that he can't give Hideki Matsuyama.
And that's been the story of the last year for him. You go back to the Masters as well. He was in the mix for about 63 holes or so and then struggled there middle of that final round. And in some ways, I see Colin Morikawa as a prisoner of his start on the PGA Tour, much like Jordan Spieth, who was so, you know, apparent in the major championships early in his career. Colin Morikawa won the first PGA championship he ever played in.
He won the first
Open Championship he ever played in. He won majors in two of his first 8 starts. So in some ways, much like Jordan Spieth, you're a prisoner to that hot start. And maybe in some ways you expect that to continue. And no question, the fans have been asking about, where's Jordan Spieth? When will we see 2015? Might not see 2015 ever again. In the same way, people are saying Colin Morikawa, where's 2020 and 2021? Might
pretty
not
high bar
see
to live
it
up to.
The same way.
Ask Rory McIlroy how hard it is to live up to that bar.
It's tough. You know, the innocence that you have as a young 20-something, it's different when you're getting to the late 20s. You know, Colin's 27, or you get into the 30s like Jordan Spieth. That's got to be very difficult. But Colin's trying to find a way, and he says it's about committing to every shot. And I think he looks like a very dangerous player, at least through 1 week of the season.
And he also moved away from Rick Sessinghouse's full swing coach. Now he's back with Sessinghouse. And he also found Stephen Sweeney, a putting coach, who seems to have done a lot of positive work with him based on what we're actually seeing out of Colin Morikawa now. But he might be the quietest number 4 ranked player in the world. We talk a lot about Scotty. We talk a lot about Xander. We talk a lot about Rory. The guy right behind them in the list, Colin Morikawa. Well, the PGA Tour's Hawaii swing is continuing this week on the island of Oahu. Sony Open in Hawaii and live first-round coverage will come your way Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. And here are some of the notables in the field. Hideki going for the double. The Ryder Cup captain, Keegan Bradley, is also showing up there. Bob McIntyre trading a Scottish winter for a little Hawaiian sunshine. Well, as the PGA Tour swing continues, we're going from the islands to the indoors. TGL, the new simulator-based golf league, is backed by some of the biggest names in the game. It's launching tomorrow. It's getting a lot of attention, but will it get traction? We'll get into that after the break.
Golf Today, brought to you by Bushnell Golf and the new Pro-X 3 Plus, the best
just got even better. Ambi Wind Grips, the best grips in golf. Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back in golf today. Tomorrow brings a debut, TGL. That's a new simulator-based golf league started and backed by Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. Six TGL teams representing six different cities will go head-to-head in a season-long competition over the course of the winter. And the action is going to be happening at the SoFi Center. This is what it looks like down in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, an enormous simulator screen. The tech is pretty cool down there, and then there's a very adaptable green and realistic bunker back there as well.
I'm sure I could scull it out of that bunker just as I would on a normal green grass facility. Here's the format, by the way. Teams play 15 holes each match, divided into two sessions. Three players, by the way, of four on a team, will play in a given session. Nine holes of triples, six holes of singles, two teams of three players tee off starting with triples and complete the match playing singles. And it's modern match play scoring system, with each hole being worth a point and the fewest shots win the point. And TGL kind of adopting a regional flavor with these teams. Boston Common, headlined by Rory McIlroy. You got Jupiter Lynx down in South Florida. Tiger Woods, y'all. In New York Golf Club, Xander, Fitzpatrick, Fowler, and Cameron Young. And Eamon, you've actually been to the facility in South Florida. I'm just curious, you know, what do you think of the concept?
I hope that it succeeds on the basis that golf could use a broadening of its product offering and an attempt to bring in a new audience, and to do so without it being a reputation laundering exercise for an authoritarian government, which is all that we've seen over the last few years in terms of new things in golf. I do think that there are a lot of cool aspects to this. You know, the facility itself is a really impressive feat of engineering. I think even cynics will be impressed about the tech aspect of it, particularly when it gets to that green that we just saw at the back end of it there, because it's amazing how many different putts they can manufacture, different breaks on that green. I do think as a whole, there are going to be headwinds for this product here for reasons that they can't necessarily control. There's an apathy among golf fans about the general state of the game,
sure,
in period, but also about this idea of creating these entertainment products that involve tour pros, because they are laughably bad at banter and trash talking and edginess. They're nerds. It's just not there. They think they're cool, but they're just not. And we saw that. We saw that the worst example I think we've seen of it,
sure,
was the match in Vegas.
Yeah.
I get it. They're all cold. They're all sort of playing for their pride and everything else. There was no edge to it, no entertainment value to that exercise whatsoever. And we've seen that time and time again in these made-for-TV matches. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can get over that. And there are other aspects that will make it interesting, watching these kind of wacky hole designs and
sure,
team members breaking down the strategy and see what they want to do. But fundamentally, what needs to be answered here is there a demand for the product that they are supplying?
Yeah.
Because they're committed to supplying it. And the fact that there's an audience for team golf in a Ryder Cup does not translate automatically to an interest in team golf on a more regular basis. And even if there is a smidgen of interest in team golf, it's a big leap to then figure out, do these fans come back? Do they care about the week-to-week standings? How do you monetize the product over the long term? So there are a lot of unknowns, but I welcome anything that's kind of new and fresh, and let's see what kind of traction it gets.
Well, like Shawshank Redemption said, you know, the world has gotten itself into a damn big hurry. You know, the viewer of sports, of movies, you know, everybody's got a limited time to watch, but maybe there's going to be some aspects of this that will keep the viewer, notably Tiger Woods. How much will we see Tiger, you know, week to week on the PGA Tour in major champs? This could be the only vehicle where we normally and regularly see Tiger Woods. Maybe the video game aspect will be nostalgic for men and women of a certain age, and they'll want to see the huge video screen. I mean, there's a lot of maybes. That's the thing. There's a lot to watch in sports. You know, football season is still going on. There's a college football playoff. You know, not to mention the NFL has expanded to to a 17-week season as opposed to 16. The headwinds are real and in some ways out of the control of TGL.
Yeah, but I think they're taking a smart approach to it in the sense that it's a very tightly packaged two-hour window. Mm-hmm. You're not waiting for guys to get to their ball to hit shots as well. So it's maybe in a way what LIV ought to have been. It's so far removed from the week-to-week norm that it's an entirely different package, perhaps even an entirely different audience. And, you know, Charlie Woods only lives a couple of miles down the PGA Boulevard. Perhaps he can be drafted in if they need a ringer at some point. But it's being backed by a lot of people who seem to have a pretty good track record in sport. John Henway of the Fenway Sports Group, Mark Lazary, Steve Cohen, all the guys who are part of the SSG group that pumped $1.5 billion into the PGA Tour a year ago are backing this as well. So they clearly see some potential value either short, mid, or long term.
Yeah, invested by the likes of Serena Williams and Steph Curry, and of course co-founded by Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. Speaking of Tiger Woods, we have some Tiger news on this Monday. Sports Business Journal is reporting that Tiger finished first in the PGA Tour's PIP program, the Player Impact Program, for the third time in 4 years. You want to talk about a dynasty? This is the final edition of the program, which was designed to reward players who drive interest to the PGA Tour. Woods wins the event despite playing in just 5 official PGA Tour events in 2024. When we return, we dive back into the record-breaking scores at the season-opening Century. Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner join with their thoughts on the big topics in the game to kick off the year.
Now, it's time now for a Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in Golf Channel's own version of Santa Claus and the Grinch, and I guess we're about to find out which one is which. Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Rex, I want to start with you. Has Kapalua lost some identity in your mind? Because it used to be the Tournament of Champions. It was the winners only. Now it's the top 50 guys who make it in there based on their FedEx Cup rankings and a couple of other pathways. Has it lost the identity that it once had?
I don't think so. And I think in this scenario, I'm not going to quite be Santa Claus, but I'm certainly not Grinch. I believe he's going to come next, and his name is Ryan Lavner. I would watch what happened on Sunday in Maui and what happened really last week at that season opening event and just ask, will you not entertain? Yes, 35 under is an eye-popping number, and certainly you start looking at what the rest of the field did. It's not as though he won by 15 strokes. Everyone was out making birdies, but I keep coming back to the idea that this is fun to watch. And no, this isn't what we're going to see later in the season. Trust me, there's plenty of really, really hard tests coming up later in the year. Soon enough, we'll be at Bay Hill and TPC Sawgrass and TPC White Knuckle and wherever else we go where players have to play very, very difficult. But you look at what happened coming down the stretch. There were no trade wins, at least on Saturday, and very little on Sunday. You had Hideki Matsuyama hole out for eagle to sort of establish himself early in the round on Sunday. You saw him hold off Colin Morikawa, one of the game's best players. You had 67 players hit drives over 400 plus yards. It was entertaining.
The Florida swing should be nicknamed TPC White Knuckle. I love that, Rex. Laugh. What'd you think? You know, 35 under, you know, the players weren't really kicking off the rust. It was the birdies and eagles galore. Are you comfortable with those numbers?
Well, Damon, I heard your tease at the top of the show, and now I'm a little bit concerned that my take might be just a little bit too hot. So on its surface, I have zero problem with what we saw over those 72 holes at Kapalua. I think it's very fun viewing on a unique golf course. And look, the facts are the facts. It's 7,600 yards, which plays much shorter. There's reachable par fives. There's only 3 par threes. You know, there's short par fours. If it doesn't blow, the golf course is defenseless, and you're going to see scores that go either in the upper 20s, low 30s, or in this time in mid-30s with Hideki Matsuyama. That's not too dissimilar from what we see during the summertime on the PGA Tour. My main gripe with what we saw, guys, is should this be a signature event where you have only 59 players, where it's $20 million for the purse, where there's very few fans on site, where there's a lot of guys who are rusty, you know, having not played competitive golf for anywhere from 1 to 4 months, and the guys who are in form are having this birdie fest, which as we know is not a great test of golf. I understand why the PGA Tour has made the Century a signature event. The Century's been a great sponsor, very supportive. Guys love it. It's sort of a family vacation. You know, you have to incentivize these top players to be able to travel at this time of year, but it's not a great test of golf, and that's what the Elevate events on the PGA Tour are supposed to be, and that's sort of where I fall on this.
Ryan, if you think 59 guys isn't enough, you're going to love TGL when it launches tomorrow. There are two teams of four, only three competitors from each team will play. What's your best guess in terms of the reception that an audience might get? Is it going to be just begrudgers among the traditional golf audience that don't like it? Is it going to be a fresh audience, or is it going to be a kind of a wait and see what it brings forth?
I'm very excited to go down there. Rex and I are both heading down to TGL for the debut on Tuesday, and we're certainly going to be open-minded. I think the main question that needs to be answered, Eamon, is there actually an appetite for exhibition golf, let alone team golf? I'm talking exhibition golf, non-PGA Tour golf. LIV Golf, since it launched in 2022, the various matches we've seen, including the one just recently, pitting four marquee players at a great golf course at Shadow Creek, like, those events are not resonating because there's not really any significance to them, or there's no sort of meaning attached. In my opinion, the event that really threads this needle is the PNC Championship, because that event is hugely significant to Tiger and Charlie Woods and to the other families that are in the field. And I think that sort of translates to the viewership, where then we become invested in their sort of play. That's where I think TGL could potentially struggle, where once the novelty of the technology wears off, once Tiger Woods makes his debut in the second event, do you have enough? Is there going to be enough interest in exhibition golf to sort of maintain that throughout the 3-month schedule and the week-to-week standings?
You know, Rex, Lav is a lot younger than we are. You know, we're old school, week-to-week PGA Tour, majors, you know, President's Cup, Players, Ryder Cup. What are you most curious about with this new league?
I'm with Eamon when he talked about the technology, and certain Labner mentioned that. I went down for Media Day a few weeks ago. The arena itself is going to be a lot of fun, and I think fans will initially come for the bells and whistles. They want to see the different zones and how the green rotates and all the technology that's going to go into this. They're going to come for the immediacy of it all. It's going to be 2 hours of golf. It's going to be a 5.5-hour round, essentially, sort of jam-packed into a smaller window, much more digestible for the fans. And I think they're going to come for maybe a peek behind the curtain. I don't know if there's going to be any trash talk. I tend to agree with Eamon that they are nerds and they're not really good at trash talking, but I do want to see them talking about strategy. But what this is going to boil down to is the competition, which is going to masquerade as a show, for lack of a better term. This is going to be performative. And we talked with Billy Horschel on our podcast just a few weeks ago about the idea that this can't be a normal PGA Tour player out in a big field by himself with the blinders on and his head down. You're going to have to be engaging with your partners, engaging with the players you're playing against, engaging with the crowd. This is golf meets WWE. That's how it's going to work.
Do you think there's a warning sign here for the SSG guys, Ryan, in the sense that, yeah, they want to innovate. Yes, they want to bring in more entertainment elements to the traditional golf viewership and the golf experience that we see on a week-to-week basis. Is there a warning sign here that the appetite for something that's new or fresh or innovative might be a little apathetic right now, that fans who've been kind of turned off by what's going on in the game in the broader sense, and who are kind of weary of watching these fairly tedious exhibition matches, are going to kind of be harder to win over for something that's new and a little bit different?
Maybe, but I think this is such a departure from what we typically see with the PGA Tour and what the SSG guys are investing into with their $1.5 billion investment right now, that I think it's fine to try something new, to try something that's ambitious, to see if it does work. You know, there's nothing wrong with sort of trying to attract a different audience. We're talking, I'm 37, Rex is 57. Like, this TGL may not still be for us. It may be for guys who are gambling heavy, or guys who aren't familiar with simulator golf, or they just want something to watch during these winter months. Anything that's fresh and innovative should be encouraged at this point, not discouraged. I think the SSG folks will learn a lot from this first season, if this continues on in the future, about what doesn't work, the players, what can sort of be managed, whether the 40-second shot clock is something that we want to sort of implement at a larger level for regular PGA Tour events. I think they can learn a lot just by what these 2 or 3 months are going to bring.
Well, speaking of new formats, lots of reporting about potential new format for the season-ending Tour Championship. We'll tackle that question when Golf Today returns after this. Our Golf Today roundtable continues with Rex and Lav. Happy New Year to those just joining us. Rex, I've always thought the PGA Tour has done a pretty good job of compelling the best players to continue to play to the end of the season. It's tough when you can say that the biggest events are the majors and the players. You know, in football, it's the Super Bowl's the end of the season, baseball, World Series, etc. Now we're hearing reporting that the Tour Championship and FedEx Cup may be undergoing another change in the format. What are you hearing and what might we see?
Well, I'm going to leave the opinion to the Grinch that's going to come after me, because he certainly has opinions when it comes to the format at the Tour Championship. However, I think what they're doing is what probably the Tour has always been doing at the Tour Championship, and trying to find some sort of solution. They've never quite gotten it right. I think we can all agree on that, that from the earliest vestiges, no one wanted to see Steve Sands with the whiteboard trying to do math on live TV. That just wasn't very good for fans or anyone else. So the version they have now is not perfect. Certainly Scottie Scheffler voiced his concern about what it was. If you're going to have a season-long race and then all of a sudden make it come down to just 72 holes in Atlanta, that doesn't seem right. We talked about it last night on the podcast. I think the best case scenario in this would be try to come up with some sort of season-long race and then transition to the playoff race. Make them two separate things, because the idea here is what we've suggested all along. A lot of people have suggested add some version of match play, whether that's metal match play or true match play, and you can do it via stroke play. You can narrow the field down through a round or two or three to whatever's left, 4, 6, 8, give me a number, whatever you're happy with, and then spend the last day or two playing head-to-head match play for all the money, which I think would be compelling TV. I think it's still up in the air. From what I've been told, there's several different versions of this. It hasn't been presented to this year's pack, which hasn't even been named yet. So I think we're a long way from the final product, but it's clear they're looking into making some sort of change.
Where are you on that one, Ryan? I know you've been a critic of this format over the years. Is the problem to you the format of that last week, or is it the playoffs in practical terms, or just philosophically, the playoffs need a radical change from one end to the other?
Yeah, it's really hard, because we do 52 round tables like this a year, and most of our criticism is that the PGA Tour is stale and needs to spruce things up. So I'm all for PGA Tour trying something new. I like the fact that they're responding, I think most pointedly, to player criticisms quicker than they ever have before. But even a format tweak at the Tour Championship at East Lake is still ignoring what the central problem is. And the central problem is that they're trying to shoehorn two things into one event. They're trying to determine the best player all season long with the FedEx Cup champion, with one highly entertaining event that's also volatile and allows everyone in the 30-man field an opportunity to win. But it can't be too volatile, because then you start to get a little bit fluky and a little bit wonky. And so with match play, or even metal match play, which has been discussed in some of the reporting we've seen so far, that would probably create even more volatility in addition to potentially being sluggish TV viewing. Because match play on TV, as you guys know, it starts out great, but it actually gets worse on TV the fewer players that you have on the golf course before then you have a championship match, which may not have, you know, two of the more compelling players in the PGA Tour going head-to-head for 4 hours in a lot of downtime. I'm with Rex that I think the solution is to separate them, as opposed to trying to shoehorn everything into one grand finale that, quite frankly, since the FedEx Cup was introduced in 2007, really hasn't worked.
Sluggish TV viewing. Nobody likes sluggish TV viewing. Rex, I have a question. You know, we've just watched two top six players, two major champs, go head-to-head on the beautiful island of Maui. I'm curious where we are, the state of the PGA Tour, because at the end of the year, 2024, in December, there was a lot of smoke, even a little bit of fire, maybe a spark about maybe a pending deal between the PGA Tour and LIV, and here the calendar flips, and are we just running in place? What is the state of professional golf as you see it?
I think coming off the first event of the year, it's a signature event. I tend to agree that this is probably a good opening. I understand where Lab is coming from, that 35 under on a resort course is probably not the best way to crown a champion at a signature event. But if you're trying to get to a bigger audience, which is what the PGA Tour essentially is trying to do that via TV, then what better way of doing it in prime time on the East Coast when everyone in the Northeast is freezing and showing the visions or the scenes that we saw last week from Maui? And then you factor in how well Hideki played. It was a historic week for him. There's no way to look around that. How well Colin Morikawa played. Keep going down the list. I think it was a very good start to the season. However, we quickly will fall back into the traps that we had last year, where you're going to have two competing products. The game's going to be fractured, and that's not good for anyone, whether it be the players, whether it be either tour, whether it be the television partners or the corporate partners, certainly not the fans. So I think it's a good start, but certainly we haven't made any jumps in the right direction yet.
Ryan, as we wrap up here, there was an interesting moment last night. Colin Morikawa dropped an audible obscenity that Rich and Brandel thought might actually warrant a fine from the PGA Tour. And I told Damon earlier, when I'm the commissioner, we're going to bonus guys for actually being authentic, even if it offends some people once in a while. Where are you on this, fine or bonus?
Oh, bonus, for sure. Like, I don't think anyone wants to see, you know, 156 Terrell Hattons who are F-bombing after every poor shot. But I loved how this was probably the most honest and accessible and relatable that Colin Morikawa has probably seemed to a lot of fans. I love the authenticity that we saw, where your mind is kind of blown that a guy just shot 35 under par and that you lost by three shots. Yeah, I don't want to hear it every single week. I think it would get tiresome and probably a little bit juvenile, but I'm all for it. Give him a bonus, just as you suggested.
And he said, right out of the gates, pardon my language, and then went right to it. I don't know how you can give a better caveat for that. I'm with you. Give him a bonus.
There are no profanities in this segment or the last one. That might be an upset, though. There might have been some profanities among our viewers. Rex and Lab, we don't want to start the new year with anyone but you guys. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, guys.
All right, folks. If you're in the market for a podcast, you want to hear some Rex and Lab, be sure to listen to the Golf Channel podcast featuring the aforementioned Rex Hoggard and Ryan Laverty. And if you miss any of our show, check out the Golf Today podcast, which includes the best interviews from our show. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page. Lots of great content coming your way. We're back after this.
And Johnson Wagner joins us now. Johnson, it's good to see you. I wonder if you get nostalgic at this time of the year whenever you see and think about what you managed to accomplish at the Sony Open. Does it kind of light a fire in you where you start to think, I could go out there and still do that?
Absolutely not. And Damon, it's good to see you. Eamon, I don't know that I can say the same for you, but I look forward to seeing you guys soon. I'm seeing those clips. The Sony Open's been such a special event for me. It was my first tournament as a PGA Tour member back in 07, and to win it, this will be the third year in a row I've actually done Golf Central for the Sony Open, so I love getting immersed in January in Hawaii. I'd prefer to be there than Stamford, Connecticut in a couple days, but I get to watch it all week long.
Oh, getting cold in the Nutmeg State, my friend. How about the post, man, the aftermath? Great photo and video of you with, like, Miss Hawaii and Miss America. You're looking like Tom Selleck on the set of Magnum P.I. I mean, how much stick did you get just for the great trophy ceremony that followed?
It was incredible. My wife and daughter were supposed to be with me that week, and my daughter ended up getting so they didn't come out. So I don't think my wife was too happy I was taking pictures with all the beauty pageant winners. But it was an incredible week. Unfortunately, didn't really get to linger around in Honolulu and celebrate. My caddy and I hopped on a red eye and flew straight to the Amex. But we celebrated pretty good there on Monday.
Was that week a sign of how volatile and unpredictable this game is, Johnson? Because you played quite a few times over the years at Wailea Country Club. You didn't actually have a good week any other week except the week that you actually won. What was different for you that week?
Well, I think it's really important, and this is why I've got a few picks for the Sony Open this year. I think it's important to play Kapalua the week before, and I had played the week before. I don't know what I finished in 2012. I think it was maybe 13th at Kapalua, and I was able to shake off the rust. When you look at a golf course like Wailea, it is very difficult to shake off rust on. You have to drive the ball incredibly well. There's a lot of crosswinds and a lot of dogleg par fours. So if you don't have your driver in play, you're going to struggle, and that's what I did most of the time at Wailea. Thanks for bringing that up, Andy.
Well, nobody likes to lose, Johnson, but there's a great anecdote about Michael Campbell walking up to Tiger Woods after the 2005 U.S. Open at Pinehurst number 2. Campbell won. You know, Woods was in the mix. And Michael said to Tiger, like, how do you do this? I am so worn out. How do you win majors? I'm just curious, how much does winning take out of a player, even if it's more fun than losing?
It's absolutely exhausting, Damon. And I actually, the next week, I was able to get back and I finished second. And I was fried for almost a month after that back-to-back weeks, which is what makes what Scottie Scheffler does so impressive, to be able to put himself in there every single week, seemingly. It is a mental drain, because to win a golf tournament, you have to have the clearest focus you can possibly have as a golfer, and it definitely takes something out of you.
Are you expecting a different vibe out there on the tour this year, Johnson, given that we're going down to just 100 guys keeping their cards, and it's a little bit more of a Hunger Games sentiment out there, that maybe there's not as much, you know, jolly, friendly banter around between these guys?
I've noticed with this younger generation, they're much more friendly with each other, as opposed to my generation, or just a little bit ahead of me, Tiger and Phil. There was so much animosity amongst the top players. But now, Scottie, Xander, Cantlay, Morikawa, they're all good friends. I imagine the team room at President's Cups and Ryder Cups is very jovial. But when you look down the list and you get down to that 80 to 120 spot, yes, I do think you're going to see guys playing every single week in the summer. It's going to be really condensed. And I'm still shocked that the tour's made the decision to go to 100. But I think ultimately it's going to be a good step moving forward.
Johnson, you were very honest after your victory. You told Sky Sports that on 18 you were a little shaky coming down the stretch. You left the birdie putt short. You said it was a little bit pathetic. What do you recall? Like, what was going through your mind and body as you're trying to win for the third time on tour?
Well, I was playing with Charles Howell III, and we were in the second-to-last group, and he had about a three-footer putting straight up the hill on the other side. So when I left my putt short, I looked at him and said, "Do you want to go?" And he said, "No, I don't. Go ahead and tap it in." And so I just was a little bit discombobulated. I darn near yipped the putt. It barely went in. And later on the flight to Los Angeles, my good friend Brendan DeYoung, he was great. We're going to show it again. Brendan, that was the old green. It was really pitched back to front. And Brendan said, "Do you realize if you hadn't made that putt, it was going to go about 5 feet by?" And I said, "Well, I didn't even think about it. Wanting to make it." So I almost cost myself the whole tournament with that little yippy stroke.
Moving on to what we just saw last week, Johnson, my only resolution starting 2025 right now is to avoid passing Colin Morikawa for audible profanity on Golf Channel. I'm doing pretty well right now. Colin dropped one last night that seemed to catch Rich and Brand a little bit off guard. Is it a big deal in your mind or among players when there is that kind of profanity? Because it's a very common thing in other sports, perhaps not so much in golf, and the tour tends to sanction players who do make that mistake. Should it be less of a deal in your mind?
Well, when you look at a guy like Colin Morikawa, Eamon, he is he's a prototype tour player. He never really says the wrong thing. And I was watching you guys with Ryan Lavner with the Roundtable. When it elevates a point that someone's trying to make, I think it's okay. And as Lav said, it's not something we want to see all the time. But if you watch PGA Tour Live, if you watch our coverage on Golf Channel, the microphones pick up quite a bit of expletives. There is a lot of cursing that goes on the PGA Tour. We're no different than any other athlete in that regard.
Yeah, microphone technology has really improved over the years. Johnson, we've also been talking about the Tour Championship and the potential format change toward the end of 2025. There's been a lot of tinkering through the life of the FedEx Cup playoffs, as you know. What would you like to see as a former player?
Well, Damon, I'm totally on board with you. And I was at the Tour Championship for the first time this past year, and it was extremely sleepy. There was no buzz to the event, not watching it on television, not seeing the crowd out there. There was absolutely no buzz. What I'd like to see is, I think we just need to pilfer the college football playoff system right now. So 30 guys make the Tour Championship on Wednesday, Thursday. The 26 players that aren't the top four seeds, 26 players play for eight spots. And so those eight guys then play the first round. The top four seeds get a bye. And then I think that makes it I want anybody to be able to win the Tour Championship, and to think about Justin Thomas, who is 30th or 28th going in, what he would have to do to get to a final match would be a lot more work than what Scottie Scheffler or Xander Schauffele would have had to do.
Johnson, it's something of a somber week in golf this week out at Sony as well. Grayson Murray, of course, won the tournament last year and died during the summer. Is it a moment where people in this game ought to just kind of sit back and realize that the wins don't matter, the money doesn't matter, and that what we spend all day talking about at the end of the day doesn't really matter that much?
Yes, but life still goes on as well, Eamon. Like, I think hopefully there'll be a lot on site of pictures of Grayson winning, and we can remember him in that light. Grayson, I met him as a rookie when he came on the PGA Tour. We played a few practice rounds together. Yes, he had his problems, but he was a blast to be around. I choose to remember him that way, and I hope that's what happens this week, that it can be a celebration of who he was as a golfer and who he was later in his life as a person, too, because he really made a massive turnaround, and I'm sad that it ended the way it did.
Now, Grayson, the son of North Carolina. Of course, you live in North Carolina. Johnson, what are you most looking forward to in this new year? You're a member of the media, but you're also a viewer. What are you most excited, maybe, and optimistic about?
I'm really excited about the major championship rota that we have this year, including the Ryder Cup. Selfishly, the PGA Championship is at my home club at Quail Hollow, so I get a home week, which is very nice. Probably won't be spending too many late nights with you at the bar, Eamon. And then when you look at the U.S. Open, is at Oakmont. I'm fired up to go to Ireland for the first time and lay my eyes on Royal Portrush. And then Bethpage Black is really near and dear to my heart. I won the Met Open there in 2001, and I played a lot of golf around Bethpage. Actually spent the night in the parking lot a handful of times to get the first tee time. So I think the rota of courses we have for the majors is going to be spectacular. And I'm just excited to get this season going. I was looking forward to the end of the year last year in the fall, and then now that it's been a few weeks, I'm very excited to get back to work this week covering the Sony Open.
Well, whatever late nights we miss in Charlotte at Quail Hollow, I guess we'll make up for at Royal Portrush back on my turf.
Save a seat definitely for me. Save a seat for me as well. Hey, Johnson, it's great to see you. Safe travels to Connecticut. Thanks for the time, pal.
Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of the show.
We're back on Golf Today. A reminder, the PGA Tour's Hawaii Swing continues this week on the island of Oahu. Live first-round coverage of the Sony Open in Hawaii comes your way Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. GolfDigest.com contributor Shane Ryan joins us now. Happy New Year for a sport that's in need of some good news. How good was the start at Kapalua? Are you okay with all the birdies and eagles and fireworks?
Yeah. Happy New Year to you, Damon. Yeah, it was great. I thought Kapalua is fun. I'm not saying I want every single week to be 35 under, but I happen to be covering it remotely in cold Durham, North Carolina, unfortunately not in Kapalua, but yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a great ending to watch Hideki try to go for the record. Very dramatic for him to get it with a putt in the last. So I think there should be one course a year and one course only where every year we wonder if somebody's going to break a record this time.
There's always been bleating about the scores at the Plantation course at Kapalua. I mean, it's been more than 20 years since Ernie Els shot more than 30 under par on this golf course as well, Shane. Last night, Mark Rolfe suggested that next year one of the par fives will be turned into a par four. Should they do more than that, though? Should they grow in a little bit more rough, try to actually make it more of a test?
No, I mean, I'm trying to be as clear as I can. I want the scores to be abnormally low. I want them to be so low. I think they should go the opposite way. Whatever that par five is, make it a par seven. Try it, like, maybe the first time someone makes a two there, it'll be the first five under on one single hole. I don't think there's any reason, if the PGA Tour puts their minds to it, that the winning score in Kapalua can't be like 100 under par. I think we should really go the opposite way. Again, just this one week. But why? Why not? Make it gaudy. It's Hawaii. It's fun. It's the first time of the year. Make it gaudy. Make it good. No reason to kind of make it more difficult.
Oh, I loved watching Hideki and Colin with those matching 62s on Saturday. Shane, one thing I love about you is your curious mind, whether it's about the Tiger Babies, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, or the Ryder Cup. How curious are you about TGL, the simulator golf league that kicks off tomorrow?
I would say with TGL, my predominant emotion is I hope it works. I think anything like that that, you know, is new and exciting potentially is really good for the game of golf. But I have to be really honest here. I don't think it will. It's one of those things where I try in my head to envision it being successful, and it's tough for me. And what I'm hoping is that that's just a failure of imagination on my part, that it actually turns out to be wonderful and exciting and a new thing. but I am sort of expecting a dull spectacle with mediocre banter. I mean, Eamon Lynch is one of the best bantering human beings I've ever encountered. Eamon, there's no way the banter is any good at this thing, right? So I'm a little pessimistic, but I hope I'm wrong. I really do hope I'm wrong, and I'm hopeful.
Well, the difference is I can't go down there because I don't think I could hit that screen. It's not big enough for me, Shane. Speaking of things that have struggled to get traction over the years, the Tour Championship format certainly falls into that. There have been some reports, Gabby Herzig in the Athletic from the New York Times reported last week that there are discussions underway about changing the format, perhaps into a medal match play format late in the week. Are you on board with any specific change, or are you just subscribing to the principle that something needs to change with that event?
Well, yeah, so broadly speaking, I think, you know, the main problem is, can we get people to look at this as an actual championship and to care about it as such? And the answer might be no. It might just be that golf, you know, the majors are so predominant that we'll never get there. But I think it is worth trying something new because it clearly hasn't worked with this. Now, last summer, I wrote a proposal basically on Golf Digest saying not only should it be match play, but to sort of assuage the fear of the sponsors that, well, okay, what if you get a dud of a finale and it's, you know, nobody wants to watch it? You could have 16 people starting on Saturday, you know, use Thursday and Friday to reduce the field to 16, then go into match play, and you could have all 16 play every single session if we look at Saturday and Sunday as two sessions each. So if you lose Saturday morning, then you go into loser's bracket. Maybe you can still fight for fifth place. So bottom line, let's say you get, I don't know, Sung J.M. against Billy Horschel. It's not your most attractive final. Maybe you've got Rory against Scheffler in a fifth place match or something like that. So I think there are ways to do it. I would prefer straight match play over medal match play. Personally, I think it's more dramatic, but any kind of change toward match play, I think, is a good one because, you know, fundamentally, why not?
Shane, as a member of the golf media, sometimes we can be a little fatalistic or jaded about the state of things. I'm curious in your conversations with non-golf media members, just the casual golf fan, are they excited about 2025? Are they apathetic? Are they still bringing up the schism in the professional game? What are you hearing when you're not, like, texting with some buddies in the media center and you're just talking to some friends at home?
Damon, first of all, I would never dream about having friends outside the golf media, so your question
is flawed from the start.
What would we talk about? I do have those friends. I would say I think the jadedness is really pervasive, unfortunately. I think the schism, as it does, right? I mean, I always go back to the IndyCar IRL schism in the 70s. I wasn't alive for that, but I do know that IndyCar happened to be very popular at the time, and now you really almost never hear about it. I don't think it's that dire for golf, but I do think the schism really hurt things for some obvious reasons that we've talked about 1,000 times before. And I don't think the jadedness and cynicism is inherent to the golf media. In fact, I would think because it's our job and we want there to be something to talk about and we want it to be popular, we might be less jaded and less cynical than your average run-of-the-mill golfer. It just creates this great irony where the recreational game is stronger than ever. But from the friends I've talked to, again, the few friends I do have outside of golf media, but really, I do think they are less attracted to the non-majors than ever before, which is unfortunate, and hopefully something changes that soon.
There's been a lot of shuffling of executives in this game over the last few months, Shane. One of them steps down this week. Molly Marcoux-Simon will end her tenure as the LPGA Tour Commissioner midweek. Do you think her tenure will be considered a success, a failure, or something in between? And was she kind of unfairly judged in the sense that she followed a guy who'd been there for 10 years who left with almost universal praise for the job he did? Was she always going to be fighting that headwind in the job, you think?
Well, what I would say is that she continued to increase the money, right? I mean, what else do you want, really? Now, what I keep hearing as a narrative, and I don't know, you know, behind the scenes, nobody's saying anything. I don't know if this is truly why she left, but they're saying, well, she didn't take advantage of, you know, the rising tide in women's sports, which all comes down to Caitlin Clark. And I think that's a super unrealistic metric by which to evaluate her. I think there is a reason that Caitlin Clark did so much for women's basketball, and that's because of Caitlin Clark. You know, you need that transformative figure. Just because Caitlin Clark's good at basketball doesn't mean all of a sudden it's going to translate to golf, that all of a sudden every women's sport is now going to have a million viewers. It doesn't work that way. And I think, you know, one of the unfortunate things in her reign, I guess, is that you don't have that hyper compelling figure like Caitlin Clark. We have not yet had our Tiger Woods in women's golf, in my opinion. So I think that's not her fault, right? And I think when you look at her tenure, she brought more money into the game. I have a tough time criticizing her. So, again, I don't know the inner workings behind exactly why she left, if she was pushed out, if she really, truly just wants to go spend more time with family. But I think it would be a mistake to judge her too harshly.
LPGA wants eyeballs. The PGA Tour wants eyeballs. Shane, in 2025, who is a more important figure inside the ropes, Tiger Woods or Bryson DeChambeau?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, it's always Tiger Woods if and only if he can compete. Or let's say if TGL takes off and that happens to be an ideal format for him and that, you know, brings a ton of ratings. But if we look at the de facto, who is going to be more entertaining, who is going to bring more people to the game, unless Tiger does something that he hasn't done in the last few years, Bryson DeChambeau is out there playing. And so I would say, you know, him, Scottie Scheffler, those guys are more important. We want to see these rivalries develop. And yeah, he turned into a compelling figure last year. DeChambeau, well, he's always been a compelling figure, but he kind of took that to a new level. He's popular on YouTube. I would think realistically he's got more chance to grow the game, quote unquote, than Tiger does at this point.